through its doors, just as if it seems to know I'm exclusively yours. Knowing this, I feel but one way. You will understand it too, in these words that I say. I'll close my eyes to everyone but you. And when I do, I'll see you standing there, my heart to any other caress. I'll never say yes to a new love affair. Then I'll close my eyes to everything that's gay. If you are not there, to share each lovely day, and through the years, and those moments when we're far apart, don't you know I'll close my eyes and I'll see you with my heart.
Weekly Signals, every Tuesday morning from 8 to 9 a.m. Join me, Mike Casper, and Nathan Callahan for the best in reality-based radio. That's Weekly Signals. Check out the website at weeklysignals.com.
Okay. The politics of food. That was good. Same way the Thursday. Okay. Thursday mornings, 9 to 10. Radio for your belly. Okay. Radio for your belly. Yeah, but you're talking in the background. Radio for your belly.
That's
yeah.
Nice.
I think that's nice. That's
great.
That's
good, yeah.
Listen to Writers on Writing, hosted by Barbara DeMarco, Barrett on Thursdays at 5 p.m. on KUCI FM in Irvine. Bye-bye.
The views and opinions expressed on this program do not necessarily represent those of KUCI, its management, or the UC Board of Regents. For more information on this or other KUCI programs, visit KUCI.org or KUCITalk.org.
And welcome once again to Writers on Writing on 88.9 KUCI FM, broadcasting from the University of California Irvine campus and on the web at KUCI.org. I'm Barbara DeMarco Barrett. Writers on Writing features authors, editors, poets, and literary agents discussing the art and the business of writing. And today my guests are Patricia Hampel and Rita Rosenkrantz. Rita is up first, I'm happy to say. She's a former editor with major New York houses. She founded the Rita Rosenkrantz Literary Agency in 1990. Her adult nonfiction list stretches from the decorative, flowers, White House style, more than 125 arrangements by the former White House chief floral decorator by Dottie Temple and Stan Feingold, which Simon & Schuster published. To the Dark, Saving Beauty from the Beast, How to Protect Your Daughter from an Unhealthy Relationship by Vicki Crompton and Ellen Zelda Kessner, published by Little Brown, and won a Books for a Better Life award. A lot of other titles. She also represents health, history, parenting, music, how-to, popular science, business, biography, popular reference, cooking, spirituality, and general interest titles. Let's bring her on, Rita Rosenkranz. Hi, Rita.
Hi there. How are you?
Good. Great to have you on.
Thanks so very much.
I'll tell you, the most popular shows always seem to be literary agents because most people, other than perhaps reading blogs or, you know, happening by a conference where an agent is speaking, writers don't hear agents talk, and especially about themselves. You know, it's always, we're always pitching to agents and know little about what drives an agent. So maybe that's why agents are so popular on this show. In any case, will you talk about how you found your way to agenting?
Yes. Well, as you mentioned, I started in 1990, and I had been at the other end, at the editorial end, having started out at Random House some time earlier. And I very much loved working with talent. I love the creative process. I like how collaboration can lead toward publication. I like helping enhance a work thanks to my insights and vision. But I wanted a more entrepreneurial relationship to the industry, and agenting made sense. So in 1990, I started my business. I began with authors I had worked with previously as their editor who would not represented, and used a megaphone mostly to broadcast my independence and new role in the industry, and took it from there.
Interesting. Now, you would be what I suppose is called a boutique agent.
Yes.
Yeah, talk about that and talk about why.
Well, I made a conscious decision to be on my own as opposed to work with another agent or agency. Because I felt fiercely independent, I wanted to be able to say yes to projects that I loved, even if there were no necessarily bottom-line incentives, and to do it my way. My list, and you mentioned the mouthful of categories I'm attracted to, is quite all-spectrum, and I consider my work a living education. I'm attracted to a lot of things that don't necessarily add up to an easily digestible description. And I wanted to be able to respond to projects that interest me without anyone giving me a disincentive to do so.
Yeah. You know, one thing that it seems that writers go through is they find an agent who feels their work is to their liking enough that they're going to market it, and they seem quite committed, and then they send it out, you know, half dozen times, say a dozen times, and if it's been rejected all those times, then often what writers find is that the agent pulls back a bit and either, you know, has lost interest, and I'm certainly not speaking for all agents, but it just seems to be lately. The agent loses interest and says, you know, you have to do something with this. Either, you know, find an editor, do something, and you know, I don't want to send it out anymore at this point. Now, is that a new development, or has it always pretty much been that way in terms of, you know, a dozen submissions doesn't sell and the agent is getting nervous?
Well, I think it's always been true. As long as there have been rejections, there have been authors who have had to have that conversation with an agent. And sometimes it's 10 submissions, sometimes it's 20 submissions. I'll tell you my watermark, which I hope to never repeat, not that you asked, but I don't mind telling you, is 43 submissions over 3 years. And it was a hallelujah moment when I got the call that asked if I had sold it yet. There was an editor who was as interested in the project as I was, albeit not instantly. It was a long road to publication. But I think, now this is sort of a part answer to your work, criticisms can actually enhance a work. I know from my own experience, as dedicatedly as I work on an editorial level before it goes out to submission, I hope that I am conquering all the problems and I am managing the project so that it will shine and that it will be loved by the universe once it goes out. But sometimes you're blindsided for obvious reasons that you learn in retrospect. And those rejections, the good ones actually, will give you information to respond to. And if you've got a good working relationship with an author, you might have the opportunity to actually enhance the work, go back to the drawing board, refine it, make changes that allow for a new submission. I'd have to hope that would be part of the conversation with between author and agent, so that the amount of time invested by both parties ultimately does pay off and rewards both parties.
Hmm. You're listening to Rita Rosenkranz here on Writers on Writing on KUCI 88.9 FM. 43 submissions.
Yes.
Now, talk about that, because that seems to be quite wonderful and quite unusual.
And it was, if truth be told, a number of years ago. But when I go out, I do have a game plan. I know the A-list of publishers who I hope will respond positively to the work. I'll also have in mind, usually, a B-list in the event that the A-list doesn't come through, and maybe even then some. I do work with regional publishers and small houses. Some of those smaller houses, while they'll not pay as much money up front, can do justice to a work. But there requires a kind of mindset to understand that they are a legitimate choice. Not everyone feels that way. Sometimes it's because they need the upfront money to drive the work, even sometimes from a research point of view. I'm dealing in nonfiction, as you know. I'm sending proposals out the majority of times. I'm not sending out a full manuscript. And often the author does need the financing through an advance to research the work, to actually turn it into a manuscript. And they won't necessarily get that from a small publisher.
Mm-hmm.
But if that's not the sole requirement, and there is a small publisher who feels a kinship to the work and can do it justice based on their track record, you know, they understand the category, I don't rule them out. Mm-hmm. Again, I don't go to them first necessarily,
yeah,
but I won't rule them out as a resort that can help you get where you're looking to go.
Mm-hmm.
I've got many examples of that, so I know it to be true.
Yeah. How did you come to focus in on nonfiction? Because I see no fiction on your list.
Right. If truth be told, I would love there to be fiction on my list. I think that I'd be rewarded emotionally if I could manage that. But my early attempts at doing fiction were not easy, and it simply was such a long haul toward any kind of possibility that I became shy,
mm-hmm,
on handling it. And I don't rule anything out. You are not supposed to ever say never. But the truth is, since most of the work I did as an editor was nonfiction, I understood that world much more cleanly and crisply,
mm-hmm,
and it was easy to become an agent along in that category, much more cleanly and crisply. But the truth is, as a nonfiction agent, my wingspan is much larger than it was when I was an editor, where my categories were a lot more focused.
Mm-hmm.
So
the same with memoir. I don't see memoir listed here.
I have handled memoir. It's, as you understand, I'm sure, a very difficult category. I do go to conferences where I meet writers, and I'll say, in some cases, over 50% of the pitches I get are memoir.
Mm-hmm.
It's clearly a popular category, at least in terms of writers' conferences. I think Alas, it's a difficult category to sell. Not impossible, judging from the bestseller list and just watching the shelves of books in memoir that are, you know, that are full from season to season, always with a new memoir. But as a rule, I'd say it's harder to sell as a category.
Yeah, it does appear that if you're writing a memoir, you really have to have a good story. And that seems to be something that writers sometimes miss is not only having, say, interesting experiences, but having a good story.
Yes, a good story well told, certainly. But a personal story that has universal implications, resonance, I think that the best ones that you are familiar with that have hugged the bestseller list really tap an emotional connection in the reader. Whether they identify with the entire story or not, they feel the well of humanism in the story.
Yeah. You're listening to Writers on Writing, and I'm here today with Rita Rosenkranz, who has a literary agency in New York City, and I'm Barbara DeMarco Barrett. I wanted to talk to you about how you find your clients, and you mentioned that you do go to writers' conferences and meet a lot of writers that way, but how do you think it sifts out in terms of how many people you find through conferences, through referral, through the slush pile? Is there any one way that it seems your clients come to you that is the most, beneficial, I want to say wonderful. How did they come to you?
Well, I should remark, I don't call it slush. I don't think it's dirty snow. I think it is a pile of unsolicited query letters, and my feeling is there's gold in them their hills. I have found many a worthwhile project through the mail, and I'm listed in the writers' directories, listing all the agents, because I do want authors to find me that way. Those who use it as a source will see my submission requirements and so on. But I do go to conferences all across the land. I've been to the West Coast twice this year already, in part because since I'm based in New York, I realize that there are biases based on place. I have a way of thinking and seeing based on the geography, based on the mood of the place. And I don't want to be defined by that entirely. I want to understand the rest of the world and the readers out there based on travel, getting to know what they're thinking, what they like, what they're hoping for, their dreams, their obsessions, their preoccupations. And I find that travel helps me do that in a more authentic way.
Mm-hmm.
So I do go to conferences, about a dozen a year, as I say, all across the land. I find them very valuable in getting an in-person sort of scope on that. It's also true that you get to feel and see the body language simultaneously. Sometimes if the pitch is not great, but the person shines despite that, it might help for a conversation that wouldn't happen any other way. So that's another way. Obviously, because I've been in business a while now, word of mouth is another real stream, a lifeline for me. But I have my own outreach campaign. I'll read an article. It'll interest me. I'll wonder if the writer can do a book tied to it. I'm thinking all the time in terms of how something can apply to book form.
Hmm. Well, I like that you don't see slush as dirty snow.
Because no, I don't.
It really is made to sound like
a... Not in of the book world, no.
Yeah, it does sound like a dirty word when you hear it in publishing. And as all the writers who have found representation that way would attest.
Yes, indeed.
Well, then, in terms of conferences, because, you know, I have a lot of students and they say, should I go? Should I just try to contact someone through the mail? How important is it for that face-to-face? I mean, I know it comes down to the work, it comes down to the writing, but might you take a closer look at something if you meet the person first and you remember them for some reason, or no?
Well, I think that just starting with, if you are writing an agent and are able to say, we met at this conference, it helps lift you up. It's not a guarantee of anything. It's not to say they're going to necessarily love your work and take you on, but it does shorten the distance between anonymous writer and the agent. I think they're useful because the best ones have fantastic presenters who are giving of themselves, both in terms of one-on-ones, let's say, the one-on-one pitches, panel discussions, how to write a good proposal, the agent-author relationship. Many of these key elements of the world of publishing are addressed. And for someone who really doesn't know much about the industry and the world they're entering, I'd say it's a very good introduction to that world and sets them up for a kind of expectation for what's to come. So I do recommend them. They're not all created equal. I don't mean to say that. There are some that shine out, and I won't necessarily name names now. But I think that authors should do their due diligence. If they see that the presenters have a long and credible history, if it seems well organized, and for me that's a real plus. It lets me do my best work when I know I don't have to worry about the incidentals. Everything's taken care of, and I know I can show up and do my best work. But they don't all qualify. Some require, you know, travel. I've gone to some where people have crossed the country to be there because of the presenters involved and because the conference has a great reputation. They survive on word of mouth as well. The good ones stay strong because they really do deliver.
Mm-hmm. So then you have a writer who has a project that you're interested in. How important is the writer, the personality of the writer? How important is the chemistry between you and the writer? Is that even something that you consider?
I do, especially depending on the kind of work. And of course, it will play a part in the working relationship. You want to get along. If there's tension in the relationship, that's clearly going to weigh down both parties and make the journey much more onerous. Clearly, it goes against your primary requirement to be a team and to be able to sort of have a good defensive plan against the world at large. You want to be able to go out as a bonded team. And obviously, hopefully, there will be an editor who will become part of that and a publisher and possibly a publicist and so on. But I think that if there's trouble in the agent-author relationship, not enough trust to keep you bonded, probably fissures will grow over time because there is so much stress in the publishing process. If a publisher is not delivering on his or her word, how an agent has to manage that, you want to be able to defend the author because the author understands how to do things in the right way.
Mm-hmm.
And that requires conversation and trust, and also just an alliance. So, you know, the truth is, just in terms of the relationship, I don't necessarily get to meet all of my authors in advance of publication. The nice thing about being in New York is that eventually they pass through, so I'll get to meet them. But it won't necessarily be in advance of publication. So that means my relationship with them will largely be via email and phone. Getting back to the conference, if I've met them at a conference, at least I've experienced them live
mm-hmm.
then.
Mm-hmm.
And I can refer back to that. I have the sense of person and personality live, separate from phone and email. So that's nice. That's a plus and another reason why conferences make sense. But much easier journey, which is full of so many pitfalls, as we know. You've brought up a couple of them, rejections and so on, when you believe in each other and you can manage that journey, which you hope is smooth but won't always be smooth.
Mm-hmm. Oh, great, great answers.
Well, thank you.
It's just, you know, you're going into depth and places that writers don't often hear, and that's a wonderful thing. We have a few minutes left with Rita Rosenkrantz, who has a literary agent in New York City, and can be found through writer's resource books and here and there. She's accessible. You can find her. Will you ever search out a writer? Will you see a piece in a magazine and say, you know, I wonder if this writer has any books out or has a book in him or her? Maybe I'll just email him or her. Will you do something like that?
In fact, a number of authors I've worked with, I have found through the New York Times and through other resources. I think the lovely thing is that you can feel just a little bit more proprietary because you've helped make that book happen from the ground up.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, in some cases, they already have a book ready to go, and you've just been lucky in that your phone call came in a timely way.
Mm.
But it can start with a magazine piece or an article written about someone who seems to be an expert in an area that interests me. And so pursuing that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. We are about at the end of our time. What can you offer to the writers listening? Is there anything they should know to ask an agent? Perhaps they have a few minutes. They're deciding on a couple of agents, and now they have a couple of questions that are going to help them decide who's for them.
Mm-hmm.
Any advice?
Yeah, well, I'll say two things. One is that I think the Authors Guild has a checklist of questions on their website
mm-hmm.
to ask a prospective agent, and you might narrow it to the top three questions that speak to you most personally that you know that will be very important for your own journey. But I'd say know thyself. What will trip you down the line if certain things do or do not happen? And have that conversation with a prospective agent to figure out whether their vision is the same, whether you see the market in the same way, what the game plan is, and if it speaks to you solidly and strongly and you feel that you are in good hands, because ultimately that's the key.
Mm. Thank you so much for taking the time here.
It's been my pleasure. Thank you.
Great to talk to you, Rita.
Have a good one.
That was Rita Rosenkrantz, a literary agent in New York City. And as I said, she is accessible. You can find her in various writers' resource books like Writer's Market and probably the literary marketplace. Anyway, when we come back, we should be here with Patricia Hampel. So stay with us. Don't go anywhere.
Come back, baby, please don't go. No, I love you, darling, hate to see you go. Come back, baby, let's talk it over one more time. My heart's full of sorrow, mama aching tears. Gone 24 hours, child, seem like a thousand years. Come back, baby, let's talk it over one more time. Darling, one month built in a day. Let's talk it over before you go away. Come back, baby, let's talk it over one more time.
a bus, train, or plane. Leaving here walking, ain't got time for bus, train, or plane. Got a letter, came today, from my baby, she's so far away. Says she needs me now, I'm still her man. Says she was sure I would understand. This morning, bags packed, I'm ready to go. Leaving this morning, bags packed, I'm ready to go. 'Cause I've been gone too long. That's why my baby warned me to come back home. Way down yonder in Dublin, Miss. Lord, you know that's way down in Mississippi.
And you're listening to KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine. This is Writers on Writing, and I'm Barbara DeMarco Barrett, and we are looking for Patricia Hample. Hopefully we will find her in time, but I'm going to play a little more music and cross your fingers.
I got to leave here walking. Take a bus, train, or plane. Gotta leave her walking. Thank you.
funny Valentine, sweet comic Valentine. You make me smile with my heart. Oh, your looks are laughable, unphotographable. Yet you're my favorite work of art. Is your figure less than Greek? Is your mouth a little weak? When you open it to speak, are you smart? Oh, but don't change your hair for me. Not if you care for me. Stay.
Valentine's Day.
Well, hi again. You're listening to Writers on Writing. I'm Barbara DeMarco Barrett. That was Etta James, My Funny Valentine, and before that was Jimmy Burns, Leaving Here Walking. As you can see, we're playing some blues because I have the blues, because our author is nowhere to be found. If you're out there, Patricia Hample, I was looking for you. I'll continue to look for you for a couple of more minutes. In the meantime, we're going to play a little bit more music. So if you are feeling in the mood, stay with us and get out your notebook and start writing to the music that you hear here. And anyway, here comes another one.
The shadows forever to be. Where's the light I'm longing to see? Love once met me by the old willow tree. Now you've gone and left nothing to me, nothing but a sweet memory. for me. Willow, weep for me. Bend your branches green along the stream that runs to the sea. Listen to my plea. Listen, willow, and weep for me. Gone my lover's dream, lovely summer dream. Gone and left me here to weep my tears into the stream. Sad as I can be, hear me, willow, and weep for me. Whisper to the wind and say that love has sinned to leave my heart a-breaking and making a moan. Murmur to the night to hide her starry light so none will find me sighing and crying all alone. Weep in a willow tree, weep in sympathy. Bend your branches down along the ground and cover me. When the shadows fall, bend, oh willow, and weep for me. I want you to weep for me, willow tree. Whisper to the wind and say that love has sinned to leave my heart a-breaking and making a moan. Murmur to the night to hide her starry light so none will find me sighing and crying all alone. Oh, weeping willow tree, weep in sympathy. Bend your branches down along the ground and cover me. When the shadows fall, bend, oh willow, and weep for me. Weep, weep.
here's to my lost youth, and here's to where it went, and here's to all my old friends, and the good times that we spent. Things will never be like they were back then. Don't you know you can't go home again? You can't go home again. And I once was a child on a summer's day, running with the wind, laughing all the way. And deep within my heart, someone says, hey friend, don't you know you can't go home again? You can't go home again. And I guess I've outlasted all my heroes, and all my dreams are fading fast. I'm right down at the end of the rainbow. There's an old and tinted photograph of me when I was young, 1963. Back when I was sure the sun was shining just for me, and it will never shine like it did back then. Don't you know you can't go home again? You can't go home again. I've outlasted all my heroes, and all my dreams are fading fast. And right down at the end of the rainbow, there's an old and tinted photograph of me and my lost youth, and me and my old dad, me and all my old friends, the good times that we had. Friends will never be like they were back then. Don't you know you can't go home again? And you can't go home again.
We didn't get Patricia Hampl, but we got some good music, didn't we? Sorry about that. Maybe she's off having fun on book tour. I don't know. If I ever find out, I'll let you know. If you want to know more about the show, though, you can go to Writers on Writing. Go to penonfire.com and click on the radio page, and that'll take you to the show page. And we will be back next week, I think. I'm going to leave you with a quote that I saw in a building along a freeway here in Southern California. It goes like this: it's never too late to become what you might have been. Thanks for listening to Writers on Writing on 88.9 FM in Irvine, KUCI. I'm Barbara DeMarco Barrett. I'll see you next time.